Are you an accredited investor looking for a new opportunity to generate passive income and build the retirement of your dreams? Then elevate your investment game with Viking Capital, where wealth meets wisdom. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out, Viking Capital can help guide you towards financial freedom through passive real estate investing. With strong and transparent underwriting, Viking identifies low-risk opportunities with the goal of preserving investor capital and maximizing long-term growth potential. And their accessible and responsive investor relations team will help you understand how each investment will impact your unique financial goals. With $800 million in assets acquired, more than $230 million in equity raised, and more than 5,000 units under management, Viking Capital is your path to early retirement. To learn about Viking Capital's latest investment opportunity, which is available for you right now, visit go.vikingcapllc.com/best. That's go.vikingcapllc.com/best to get started today. Did you know that within a decade, women will hold $30 trillion in investable assets? Yet somehow, only 19% of women reported feeling confident in selecting investments that align with their long-term goals. Our friends at InvestHer are out to change that. InvestHerCon is the number one premier conference for women in real estate, and it's happening June 2nd through the 4th in Austin, Texas. InvestHerCon is not just another real estate conference. It's a transformational experience focused on real estate investing, business strategies, and self-care tactics, all designed to help women take control of their financial futures. Gain the knowledge and skills you need to grow your portfolio and build a sustainable business, all while connecting with over 500 women who are playing at the same level. To learn more and to get your tickets, visit InvestHerCon.com today and use the code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. That's InvestHer, HERCon.com, promo code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket.
Raising money, whether it be for startups, whether it be for real estate, is not easy, especially when you're getting your start, especially when you're not an established name in the game.
Best ever listeners, I want to mention Lima One Capital, and I found out about them through a guest that I was interviewing on the show, and he mentioned how he was scaling his business. He was actually buying 10 single family homes within 1 year. And I asked him, how were you able to buy 10 single family homes and how were you financing that? And he's like, oh, well, I just use an asset-based lender. I was like, who is that? And he told me it's Lima One Capital. I reached out to them afterwards, got to know them, and they are the sponsor of today's episode because they've got some unique lending programs. One of them is called Rental 30, where, as I mentioned, they're an asset-based lender. So they're lending based on the property's appraised value, as well as they look at the down payment that you're bringing to the table and the cash reserves. They'll lend up to 75% loan to value. And this is huge. This is huge because typically as a single family investor, your lending strength is based on your personal income, as well as how many properties you have, how many loans you have out. There's no restrictions on portfolio size with their Rental 30 program. Go to limaonecapital.com/best ever. Sign up, learn more about their program. That's limaonecapital.com/best ever. They also have a program for fix and flippers. Even if you haven't done a fix and flip, they'll still lend to you. They've been in the business since 2010. So they've been around the block. They know their underwriting guidelines. They're not loosey-goosey, but they do have a very specific criteria that helps beginning fix and flippers get their fix and flip projects done, as well as experienced fix and flippers. They reward you as an experienced fix and flipper, and you actually get a lower interest rate and lower origination fee. Again, go to limaonecapital.com/best ever. And some legal stuff I have to say, it is Lima One Capital LLC, and the NMLS ID number is 1324403, and their address is 201 East McBee Avenue, Suite 300, Greenville, South Carolina, 29601. Again, limaonecapital.com/best ever. If you're looking for a fix and flip loan, or if you're looking for a buy and hold investment property and you're trying to finance it and you want it to be asset based, LimaOneCapital.com/best ever. Best ever listeners, hello, hello, how's it going? Welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I'm Joe Fairlesson. Well, I hope you're having a wonderful best ever weekend. And because it's Saturday, of course, we got to do Situation Saturday. With us today, we've got a previous best ever guest, episode 121 specifically. It's titled, one of my favorite titles. When I looked this title up to put the link in the show notes, I just started cracking up. I titled it Crowdfunding Tips from a Crowdfunding Wizard. Episode 121. How you doing, Nav Athwal?
Hey, Joe. Great to be back. Definitely looking back at that title makes me giggle a little bit too.
Yeah, I love it. A little bit about Nav, and then we're going to get right into Situation Saturday, where Nav's going to talk about a sticky situation he's been in. And not only, he's not going to leave you hanging, though. He's going to tell you how he overcame it, the challenges he overcame, and where he's at right now. A little bit about Nav, and then he'll get into it. He's the co-founder and CEO of Realty Shares, which is an online marketplace for accredited investors to securely invest as little as $5,000 into private real estate investment properties. He's a guest lecturer at UC Berkeley Law. He is a former electrical engineer turned attorney, turned real estate entrepreneur based in San Fran, California. And you can say hi to him and the rest of his crew at realtyshares.com. All right, Nav, here we go. You want to give the best ever listeners, you know, a little bit about your background and then go right into your sticky situation?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Joe. So as Joe mentioned, you know, come from a background of both engineering and law. I graduated from undergrad and started working as an engineer. But shortly after that, got my real estate broker's license. Always had an affinity for real estate and just been interested by it. And so started selling commercial and residential properties in and around the Bay Area, then decided to go to law school, where I graduated in 2010 and started working as a real estate attorney in San Francisco. And I mostly represented large institutional clients on getting permits as well as purchase and sales, leasing, et cetera, et cetera. So did that for about 3.5 years before starting Realty Shares. And, you know, uniquely enough, the situation I'm going to talk about today is kind of what gave the idea for Realty Shares in the first place. So I'll tie that all together at the end, but I've been doing Realty Shares now for about 2 years, and we've raised about $30 million of venture capital money, and have a team of about 33 people here in downtown San Francisco. So very excited about business and where it's headed. But the situation I'm going to talk about today, I'm sure it's not unique to me, is about raising money. So, you know, as an entrepreneur running a startup, I'm constantly thinking about raising money because money is the one resource you can't run out of. Otherwise, the business goes away. So, you know, thinking about when to raise that next round of financing, what terms we want, how much runway we want, that's something I'm constantly thinking about. Before I started the company, I was a very active real estate investor, and I still invest, but most of my time now goes into the company. And so as a real estate investor, as someone looking for deal flow, you know, one aspect of job is finding the right deal and getting into contract on the right deal and making sure you can get the purchase price. That's something that makes sense for the deal. But then there's this other element to actually acquiring real estate, which is how do we capitalize the deal? There's a debt piece, there's the equity piece. How are you really going to pay for this deal? So back in 2010, when I first graduated from law school, you know, I'd started buying real estate in the mid-2000s. But in 2010 is when I started getting really active because it was such a great time in the market, right? We just come out of a large recession. Property values were well below replacement costs. There was a lot of opportunity to earn good returns if you can find the right property and capitalize it. So I was buying mostly single family homes and multifamily projects and had raised some friends and family capital early, which was a very inefficient process, but, you know, tapped out of that pretty quickly, but the opportunities were still pretty abundant. So I remember specifically, I was at an auction and I put a bid on a multifamily project. It was about 12 units, nothing extravagant or big, and actually won the bid. And there was a small $5,000 deposit that went into actually being able to bid on the property. And then there was 30 days in which I had to come up with the remaining $400,000 to acquire the asset. This property was worth at least $600,000, but because it was bank owned and at the auction, there's a good value price to be, it was a potentially really good value to, in terms of purchase price, if I could come up with the $400,000. Unfortunately, there was a contingency on the property that it had to be all cash. So, you know, a loan was out of the question, and in 30 days, it was going to be nearly impossible to get a loan anyway. So, you know, have this property under contract, wanted to buy it. It was an amazing property. Since then, you know, I looked at the property value recently. It's nearly doubled since the 2010 timeframe, but didn't have money, right? Didn't have the friends and family capital I can go to. So had 30 days to basically come up with $400,000 or lose $5,000. Because, you know, as the bidder deposit would disappear if I couldn't come up with the rest.
Yep,
so
yep.
I started scrambling, you know, I realized during this process just how painful fundraising for real estate could be. When I first got the winning bid, I actually reached out to a couple of larger investors in my network, including one of my professors from Berkeley, who's my professor at Berkeley Law, and, you know, said, hey, do you have any thoughts or suggestions? Hoping he would say, hey, I'll invest.
I'll take all 400, please.
Take all 400,000. Because he's a very successful real estate developer, and he had actually sold a 2,000 unit entitlement project near Sacramento for about $400 million in 2006, 2007. So I know he had money. I was hoping he'd share some of that money with me. So I called him and I said, hey, Bill, you know, would love some suggestions. Obviously, I asked him outright, hey, can you give me the money? But, you know, said, hey, I just got in contract on this property. It's very exciting. Gave him, you know, a pro forma model and tried to pitch him indirectly on this really cool property. Unfortunately, even though he had the money, he just didn't have the time to really dig in. But, you know, gave me some thoughts and suggestions around what could work. And one of the suggestions he gave me was, you know, there's a lot of these local private money lenders, hard money lenders that could get you capital within, you know, 2.5-3 weeks. They're going to be pricey, but you may be able to, you know, close the deal in the time frame you need to. So put me in touch with a couple hard money lenders that were in Oakland, the Bay Area. And I reached out to them, and this was my first hard money loan ever. I had never before received hard money and didn't really know how it worked, but started having conversations with these hard money lenders and kind of told them about the property and what the situation was. And they understood it. That's their business, is really coming up with capital quickly, but charging an arm and a leg for it. So, you know, after running them through the deal, you know, they seemed interested and gave me what they considered a LOI or term sheet. And that's when it first hit me that hard money is very expensive capital. The interest rate was in the teens, and there's a couple points. So although it would help me buy the property, it would not be without a cost. So at least I had one option to get this property closed, and this is a property I really wanted. So with that term sheet in hand, I felt a little bit more relaxed and decided, you know, to start thinking about some more out-of-the-box, you know, ways to kind of raise this money. And at the time, you know, I was an early user of LinkedIn. And at the time, I realized I had a lot of connections on LinkedIn, and, you know, a lot of these connections had real estate as an interest on their profiles. And so, you know, at the time I started, you know, emailing or messaging some of these, you know, potential real estate investors and said, hey, you know, well, what's going on? We, you know, we've been connected on LinkedIn for a little bit, you know, see that you're interested in real estate. Are you buying or active in buying real estate? And actually from a lot, I sent a lot of messages, and a few of them actually did turn into connections that actively replied and said, you know, yes, I am. We've been connected for a little while. And you know how these social networks and especially LinkedIn go, and especially now, is a lot of people you're connected with, you really don't know. But in some of that was true in this case, but, actually established a good little rapport with a handful of potential candidates for investment dollars into the property. None of them actually ended up investing in this specific property because, unfortunately, raising money for anything isn't that quick, but have developed some really good relationships through those exercises that have helped in other ways, both with realty shares as well as with other properties that I've purchased. So, you know, after trying that exercise, and, you know, getting the hard money term sheet, I, you know, was sort of quickly running out of ideas, and the 30 days was quickly approaching. And so at the time, I unfortunately, and now fortunately, because the property ended up being a great property, did go with the hard money option and received a loan from the hard money lender, which I was then able to refinance about 12 months later and pay back with more conventional financing. And so the property did get acquired. I did get the deal done. And through that exercise of trying to raise capital and trying to, you know, put together investors for this deal, and I did have enough money for the down payment piece. Unfortunately, the hard money lender was willing to go up to quite a high leverage amount. That's one of the benefits of hard money, is they don't have the same leverage requirements as a bank or a more conventional lender. So I did have to scrap together some money from friends and family for the down payment, but was able to get the deal done. And the biggest lesson learned was, you know, raising money, whether it be for startups, whether it be for real estate, is not easy, especially when you're getting your start, especially when you're not an established name in the game. So that's really, again, what kicked off the idea for Realty Shares. You know, I know there's a lot of developers out there and real estate investors that are looking to buy properties that make a lot of sense, but don't have the capital, or don't really know how to raise the capital, or don't want to go through the exercise of having to talk to a lot of investors. So that's what kicked off the idea. But that's kind of how it went down. It was quite an interesting experience, and you know, opened my eyes up to the inefficiencies of raising capital.
What type of paperwork did you have in place when you were reaching out to people?
Not a lot. So I put together a pro forma model, basically, that showed what the cash flow and IRR could look like for this property, and you know, I had a high level sort of just waterfall structure that I was proposing for the investors that did participate in the deal. I had obviously data around the property. I kind of put together a offering memorandum, basically pictures of the property, you know, the property data. I had attached some property reports to that. So just some high-level information on the property, as well as a waterfall and pro forma financial statement, was essentially what I had put together for investors for this specific property.
Did you model it after one that you'd seen before, or were you just throwing things together that you thought were relevant?
I did. So, you know, I had quite purchased real estate in the past. So I did have models that I'd constructed in the past, but I also, you know, went through, when I was going through Berkeley Law, I had taken classes at Haas, and there I'd learned how to put together a pro forma model and had a sample pro formas from that experience. So I kind of put together a bunch of different things I had in the past and created a model for this specific property. And that's kind of what I use with investors.
Did you have to have any sort of legal documents to qualify people before you're talking to them, or to, get the subscription agreement in place? Should you go into it, or PPM or anything like that?
Yeah, I had draft agreements. Unfortunately, it didn't get far enough where I had to use them. But I did have draft agreements, both an operating agreement, because the proposed structure for this was going to be an LLC, as well as subscription docs. But they were sort of form docs that I would present to investors so they can get a feel for the deal, but didn't actually end up using, because I didn't end up raising capital from third parties. Instead, went the hard money route.
How much did you raise from the, because you said you raised a little bit from third parties, right? And the majority was hard money. How much did you raise from third parties?
It was about $40,000 from third parties, and some of that was my own cash, and then the rest came from the hard money lender. So the hard money lender in this case was able to go up to 90% of the value of the property, which was great, because that made me, I could put in a lot less capital, which, you know, was already a struggle at that time, especially given the short time frame. And so the about $40,000 or 10% of it was the money that I had raised.
What did you do with the property since then?
So I still own the property. It was about 60% occupied. That's why there was a lot of value there. So the first thing I did was, there's some cosmetic rehab work, you know, that required a little bit of capital, but I did it in a way that, you know, I thought was very cost effective for the deal. So first thing I did was kind of rehab some of the units that were vacant to get them rentable. And then quickly rented up those units. You know, what happens when a bank owns a property is it becomes mismanaged pretty quickly because they have no incentive to, you know, really operate it like an owner would, although they are the owner because they've taken them back through foreclosure. So the first thing is really once you get an active manager there that actually cares about the property and knows they're going to hold it for the long term, there's a lot of like potential value to add really quickly. And that was the case here. This is a well-positioned asset in a good submarket, and was able to get the vacancy from, you know, 40% down to about 15% in about a three-month period. So that obviously increased the cash flow quite dramatically, and now the occupancy sits above 90%. It's been a good property. So obviously, as the rental income increased, so did the value of the property. And since then, you know, it's been a really low headache, low cap, not a very capital intensive asset, multifamily. When, you know, essentially, unless you're trying to do a deep value add piece to it, really just, you know, once units turn, you rehab them and you re-rent them. So you always want to keep a nice stock of potential tenants, market the property well, and make sure it's operating efficiently. And so now, actually, I think I've held it long enough, and I think the value of it's increased enough where I'm looking to potentially sell it. But I still do own the property. It's been a great investment. So, you know, for those investors that turned it down early on, or just weren't able to get in because of timing, I think there would have been a great potential return performance for them.
Well, now you're just rubbing it in.
Yeah, a little bit.
Everybody who's connected with Nav on LinkedIn, that last statement was for you.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
What advice would you give someone who is in that situation right now where they've put down an earnest money deposit, they need to raise money, they haven't raised money before? What should they do?
Yeah, well, first, try not to put a deposit non-refundable down unless you kind of have some idea of where the money's going to come from. And I think for me, I was just so eager, and this property was so attractive that I kind of have the attitude of, you know, I'll get stuff done. Like, you know, something, if I'm challenged in a way where I know I'm running up against a clock, actually excites me a little bit, but it's not the way to do it if I had to do it all over again. So, you know, think about where the capital, how you're going to capitalize the project before you put money down that could disappear. You know, two is, I think raising money is really about relationships. And if you're really getting into the real estate game for the first time and you don't have that network of investors, you know, you really do have to kind of, that is a full-time job, really, networking and getting investors in your potential network that could fund your deals. And then obviously convincing them that you're able to find good deals and fund good deals. So, you know, I think the earlier you can start with networking with investors and, you know, the better it could be for when you're trying to raise capital. Obviously, having really good deals, it matters. In 2010 and 11, there was a lot of good deals to be had. And it's unfortunate that so much money, the capital markets were so dry in that time frame because there was so much opportunity. And now I think it's gotten a little better, but now the opportunities are harder to find because the market's picked up so much, especially in multifamily. So, you know, obviously be careful about the property that you're picking, especially if you're new to the investing game. But obviously one of the plugs I have to make here is the reason we created Realty Shares is to alleviate some of the pain points that come with raising and managing capital. So, you know, obviously we have a vetting process and we don't work with first time investors, so it's not going to be applicable to everybody, but if you do have deal flow, you're finding, you know the deal well, you know the market well, and the only trouble you're having is you know, raising the capital you need for the deal, or at least raising part of the capital you need for the deal. That's why we created Realty Shares as a way to kind of alleviate some of the pain points that come from raising capital so that you can focus more of your attention on actually finding a deal. So, I would say have the money. Think, you know, there's definitely more innovative ways to raise capital today than there were in 2010. And I'm glad we're kind of pioneering that. And then start networking really early. You know, my professor, although he didn't end up investing, was the reason I got the deal done. He put me in touch with a hard money lender, put in a good word, and I was able to close that within the 30-day time frame. But if I didn't have my professor who I was able to reach out to, you know, I would have probably not connected with that hard money lender. And it would have been a deal that maybe didn't get done in a 5K down the kind of the toilet. So
I still would bet on you if you didn't get connected to the hard money lender through your professor. I still think you would have found a way to make the deal happen.
I appreciate the vote of confidence. So I'm sure maybe I would have run into you somewhere and we could have done the deal together.
There we go.
That would have been a nice outcome.
Yeah, in 2010, you would have found me at an advertising agency working on some Microsoft campaign for their social media. So you wouldn't have wanted me to participate with you, although I definitely would have been able to introduce you to my friends who I work with, and they might have been able to invest.
The both of us together would have figured it out.
Yeah, there we go. Well, Nev, this has been just a wonderful story. I really enjoyed, and I know the best ever listeners enjoyed hearing, hey, you got 30 days to raise $400,000. You never raised any money before. Ready, go. By the way, you lose $5,000 if you don't do it. So it's just a great situation. Thank you for sharing it with myself and the best ever listeners. Hope you have a best ever weekend, and we'll talk to you soon. And best ever listeners, guess what? Skill Set Sunday is tomorrow, so looking forward to talking to you tomorrow. Bye. If you're looking for a real estate brokerage that provides full-service commercial and residential property management, as well as traditional brokerage services, then contact James Wise and his company, the Holton Wise Property Group. Their website is holtonwise.com. That's HOLTONWISE.com. They're based out of Cleveland, and they help local and out-of-state investors build and manage completely passive rental property portfolios.